Today's podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, and medical-grade ingredients. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburn, rashes, and other types of skin damage. And the best part is that it's safe and non-toxic, which makes it suitable for use on all skin types and all parts of the body, even with rosacea, eczema, or acne-prone skin. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of five-star reviews and ingredients so safe and clean they can be used from the littlest member of your family to the oldest, you now have one simple solution for all your family's skin health needs. I have three kids. We have injuries in our house almost daily, and so it's so nice to have Active Skin Repair to reach for in my cabinet because I know that it's safe, natural, and non-toxic. We use it for things like burns or scrapes or cuts. My youngest daughter recently had a really bad finger injury and we were using it on her and it did not sting or burn her at all. So it was perfect. Today, as a listener of this podcast, you can get a special discount on your order of Active Skin Repair. Visit activeskinrepair.com to learn more, and to get 20% off your order, use code NOONETOLDUS. That's activeskinrepair.com, code NOONETOLDUS for 20% off your order. Welcome back to the No One Told Us podcast. I'm your host, Rachel, and today is a very special day, a very special episode because I have my parents, my mom and dad, Diane and John, here today, and they're going to answer a lot of our burning questions about their generation and about being grandparents and how things have changed from the time that we were babies back in the late 80s, early 90s, and today. So thanks for doing this with me, guys.
You're welcome.
Anytime.
They're at my sister's house right now and she has two dogs. So if anybody hears any like whining, that is what that is.
It's not us.
It's not them. I have had mom on the Instagram before and people love her, but today is dad's big debut. Is there anything that you want to say before we kind of just dive into questions?
Other than the fact that we're your greatest fans.
Thank you.
No, I don't think so. My assistant, Corey, just had a baby yesterday. I don't know if you found out somehow, but she's a follower of yours. And
oh, yay.
Yeah. And one of the things she said, which I think is really right, which is really true, and I think probably the reason why, you know, you're resonating with people is that she said, you know, what I love about it is that it's sort of like whatever you do, it's okay. And that's the way Rachel makes people feel. And I think that's right. And I think that, you know, we'll probably get into it a little bit later, but I think it's really right that, cause we're going to start talking about how it was for us and, what did we know? What did we learn? What were we trying to find out about raising children? And it was always like somebody was telling you, this is the wrong way. This is the right way. And you spent half the time screwing it up and you spent half the time trying to figure out what the right way was. I really appreciated what Corey said about you, you know, where she was just saying, she just makes you feel like whatever you do, it's not wrong, you know, and to try to like guide yourself that way and do it with some instinct and do it with some love and it would be right somehow, you know? So that was just something
Start out with. Shout out to Corey and welcome to your baby. That's so sweet. For our generation too, I mean, for you guys, it was a little different just because of where you were hearing the information. But I think today there is still a lot of like, this is the right way, this is the wrong way. And we have social media and we have like all these experts that are trying to tell us like that there's one best way. There's a lot of like scientific type of parenting now with different books coming out saying these are scientifically the ways that are the best ways to do everything. And I think that can be really overwhelming. Where did you guys get most of your information about how to raise babies when we were born?
Well, as I told you before, I mean, my mom had already passed. And so I didn't have really anyone to go to. So I did a lot of it by instinct, but I also did a lot of it by Dr. Fodi, your pediatrician. I'd call him or the staff was really good. But Dad and I don't know how many times we'd go to the library or a bookstore and buy self-help books. I mean, but I also, like Dr. Brazelton was a huge influence back in the day, back in the 80s and 90s. And he was a really instrumental part of how I tried to raise you kids. He was really the one that also...
His stuff is great.
His stuff is great. He was, He was very much a role model. He was very, like, you talk about gentle parenting now. I feel like that's what he was really encouraging, mm-hmm. was, you know, kids need discipline in the sense of they need to know, you know, right from wrong. You know, you don't touch a stove, you don't, you know, safety issues, things like that. But he also was very much into listening and letting your children have a voice, but have boundaries as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually went to see him one time to hear him speak. We were so like impressed by him.
Really?
And one of the things that he was really into, and I think it did usher in the kind of gentle parenting thing, was one of his main things was that babies are rational beings. Babies don't just scream and cry, you know, willy-nilly with nothing behind it. They're doing mm-hmm. it for a reason.
They have a need. Mm-hmm.
And we didn't think that until, you know, we learned that. And child rearing and child, you know, raising kids before that was the whole thing of like, your baby's an irrational beast and you have to train it somehow, become a little miniature adult mm-hmm. as quickly as you can. And Dr. Brazelton would say, no, it's like, we don't care about toilet training at a certain time. It's just like, get it done eventually. You don't need to get it done now.
Yeah.
And that listening to the baby and treating the baby as a rational being was the way to proceed, you know, and we had never heard that before. That the parenting books and child rearing books or whatever media we had before that never said that.
No.
I love that. And I didn't know that you guys went to hear him speak. Did you know that so I just started this fellowship, as you guys know, and we spent like the whole weekend last weekend talking about him and his like touch points and stuff. So that's cool that you saw him speak.
Kidding.
I didn't know that. No.
Is he still relevant?
He's still very relevant.
Oh, he's still pretty relevant.
Yeah, in like the child development and like attachment world. So then you were hearing this information that was resonating with you. And then so how did you take in the information from my pediatrician who told you to let me cry it out when I was a baby? Like, did that seem to like contradict what you guys felt like you knew or wanted to do? Or were you just desperate because I was like a difficult baby? How did that all go?
You weren't a difficult baby. You just, you know, everything back then, if you cried a lot or did a lot of things, like everything was put on, she must be a colicky baby. Everything was colic. Mm. Then you'd be told, go out and get the colic drops and, you know, and then that wouldn't help. And it was something in my breast milk. And so I had to go on, you know, all these different, you know, restrictions for my own diet because everything was affecting you. And, you know, and some of that obviously could have been true, but some of it could have just been your temperament. And I don't know. I really don't know why the crying was so strong with you. But, you know, it could have been that you just had a sensitive stomach, as we know even today.
Well, the thing of it was, too, that we regarded the information that we got from the pediatrician like it was the gospel. Whatever he told us to do, we did it.
Yeah.
But I do remember at a certain point in time, we didn't agree with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember specifically with you, I came home from work one day and mom was sitting on the floor outside your room and you were in the crib screaming your head off.
Aww.
But mom was crying, too. And I was like, okay, maybe I should go back to work, you know? But and she was like, I don't agree with this. And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, she's been in there crying. And Dr. Foti just told me to let her cry, let her cry. And she said, I just don't think it's right. Yeah. And I think it kind of marries together somehow with what you're doing, which is that, you know, doctor's not always right. Crying isn't always right.
Yeah.
Maybe my parental instinct is that I should go in there and console this baby who's crying for a reason of some kind. And, you know, solving the problem was super difficult, but just sitting there and letting the baby cry, mom knew that it wasn't the right thing. And just something was telling her, this isn't right, you know?
Yeah.
And afterward, after we decided as a couple not to do that anymore, we started bringing you into our room and put you in the bassinet. And it almost, I can't recall now, it's been so long, but I feel
so
like
long.
it was absolutely the change. Like it just changed.
Close. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. It just, and I was responsive to you. And so it seemed like all of a sudden you weren't as colicky and you weren't as crying as often because I was, it was because I was consoling you that you weren't crying.
Right.
It doesn't make sense not to console a baby who's crying and then you're upset that it's crying.
I know.
You know?
And,
I know.
You know, you have to realize like in New England in the 1990s and early 2000s, some of this stuff was stuff you weren't supposed to do. Like you wouldn't admit to your friends that like your kid was sleeping in your bed with you, for example, or was sleeping even in your room. Cause these were, there were yardsticks you were supposed to meet. Yeah. And the good parents didn't have those, didn't do that stuff. Yeah. Like your baby was out of diapers at a certain point in time, or you were a bad parent.
Right.
Your baby was not breastfeeding after a certain time, or you were a lousy parent.
Right.
Or your kid was not sleep, you know, was sleeping the whole night in their own bed and not getting up. Otherwise, they were like a considered a behavior problem, or you had some kind of like psychological problem with your kid because they were doing this stuff that wasn't meeting the yardsticks, and it was a shameful thing for the parents. You would never tell your friends like my kid sleeps in my bed with me or anything like that.
Yeah. But do you feel like a lot of your friends and people that you knew probably were having those issues and just nobody talked about it?
Nobody talked about it.
Nobody would admit to it. No one. I mean, I had a probably my best friend while we were raising kids was a woman by the name of Mary. And she had kids the same ages. And her and I would go back and forth. And we probably were the only ones that would really say to each other, like, oh, I brought the baby in the bed last night. And she'd be like, oh, you do too?
Mm.
Or, you know, but it was like very, you wouldn't tell your, like she had parents.
Yeah.
She would never have told her mother that she did that because she would get chastised for it. I mean, it was like a big secret. And yeah, you just wouldn't do that.
And grandpa lived with us. So my mom's dad lived with us until he passed away when I was in eighth grade. So he was kind of there with you guys.
You were like eighth grade?
Yeah. So he was there with you guys while we were babies, obviously, and growing up, he was in the same house. Did he ever share his opinions with you, or did you ever ask his advice?
Well, it's funny you say that because he was one of these people that knew his boundary. And so he wouldn't say a lot or put his two cents in. However, when we were going through the sleep training, there were a couple of times during the day where I'd be really upset, as Dad said, with you crying or your sisters. It was more you. And he would say, why are you letting the baby cry? Just go in the room and pick up the baby. So even with him coming from his generation, it was like he didn't understand why I wouldn't do it either. And he would think that he thought it was really wrong of me not to go in. And that was his generation where you would think he wouldn't have that attitude, but he did. And, you know, and it wasn't long after that Dad had come home and found me, you know, crying about it.
Yeah.
So I think I was getting his influence, Dad's influence to make me feel like I'm not crazy in feeling like this is wrong and that I don't want to do this. Because now the two most important men in my life, my father and my husband, were telling me that it was okay, that I didn't feel comfortable with this.
Yeah.
But Grandpa, you know, the thing you got to remember about Grandpa was that as far as the kids were concerned, he was just the sweetest, nicest guy in the world.
I know.
Yeah.
He was a softie.
I'd go in the room and I'd see.
Yeah.
He would just do everything for you guys. Like I'd go in the room and you'd be sitting in his lap with a bowl of like whipped cream, just eating, you know, or some kind of like a pile of cookies in your lap or something like that. So, you know, he was just the sweetest, nicest guy to you guys. And he was not a disciplined guy at all when it came to that.
Yeah.
Even though he was a disciplined guy with his own kids.
Well, I was going to say, like, grandparents tend to be a little more lenient with their grandkids. So I wonder if he would have approached it in the same way with you guys when you were kids, Mom, as he would think you should approach it with us. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with some questions from my audience.
Now, if you know me, you know that I love to cook and I love creating healthy meals for my family. But even more than that, I love things that are easy and convenient. And even though I love to cook dinner for my kids, sometimes for things like lunches or if I'm just going to be working at night and need something easy for myself to grab, I love Factor's meals. And especially now in the spring and summertime where we've got more plans, we're busier, we're outside, we're going out and doing things more, having Factor meals in my fridge is such a game changer because they're healthy, they're zero prep, and they're so fresh and delicious. Factor's fresh and never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes right from your microwave. So no matter how busy you are, you always have time to enjoy nutritious and great tasting meals. And when I tell you they are actually delicious, I 100% recommend these. My mom even recently asked me, are they really good? I heard you talking about them on your podcast, but are you really saying that you like them? And I said, yes, you have to order them. They are actually so, so yummy. So what are you waiting for? There are 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons you can choose from each week. So you always have new flavors to explore. You'll never get bored with the same old meals. They truly taste like restaurant quality, so you don't feel like you're depriving yourself of anything. It actually feels like you're fueling up your body with delicious food that is real and super, super nutrient dense. So you can enjoy this effortless support to your lifestyle, choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage whatever goals you have, and simply just eat well-balanced, delicious, easy food. Head to factormeals.com/nooneToldUs50 and use code nooneToldUs50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. So this is an amazing deal. That's code nooneToldUs50 at factormeals.com/nooneToldUs50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% of your next month while your subscription is active. And feel free to send me a message and ask me for my favorite meals because I love talking about them and I'll be happy to help you choose. I'm always looking for screen-free options to entertain my kids, especially my oldest, when we have long car rides or things like that. And something that I really love using with him are podcasts. And there's a really cute new podcast called Mysteries About True Histories, which the acronym is MATH, M-A-T-H. And it's from the creators of the hit podcast Who Smarted and Netflix Brainchild. And it's all about the adventurous world of mysteries about true histories. And it follows these two characters, Max and Molly, who have just been recruited into a secret order of problem solvers. And they're on adventures through time, packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history. And it's really funny, which makes learning kind of cool. And it's perfect for ages 6 and up. So new episodes drop every Thursday, each stacked with so much laughter your kids won't even realize how much they're actually learning. And my oldest is about 6.5 and he loves stuff like this. So it's a great new podcast to introduce to your kids. The episodes are really short, like 15 to 20 minutes. So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your older kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, we're back and we have some questions that I gathered from my Hey Sleepy Baby audience that they want to know. So the first one is, I recently posted a TikTok trying to give some helpful advice to the boomer generation about how to have effective boundaries with their children and their in-laws and their grandchildren. And it was not well received at all by the boomer generation. They were very offended about these boundaries. And perhaps it was my delivery. I, as you guys know probably better than anybody, I can be a little bit snarky.
Yeah.
But I thought that my points were valid. So people are wanting to know what your thoughts are about our generation kind of being like, quote unquote, obsessed with boundaries. And do you think it's too much or do you think it's all in the best interest of the kids? Where do you guys stand on that stuff?
I did think it was a little snarky. Because I was always used to telling you what to do and I felt like you were telling me what to do. But that's okay. I mean, you're the expert. But,
no, thing was, is like, I was not talking to you guys and I was not talking to my in-laws because like, all of the comments were like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're not my daughter. Like, oh my God, I would kill myself if my son married someone like you. Yeah.
Right. I thought some of it was pretty basic and straightforward, like asking about the bottle feeding versus the breastfeeding and all that kind of stuff. That was pretty easy, I thought. But then there was one that kind of made me think a little bit more, and it was something I had never thought about when you were saying ask permission to touch the kids or hug the kids or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cuz like, you know, when Noe and Otto and Lenny are at the house, we don't really do that. I mean, and I thought that seemed a little frankly overboard to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I going to have to ask Noe if she wants a hug every time I want to hug her? I'm not doing that.
That was one that a lot of people had a problem with, and someone responded saying something like, I'm going to hug them no matter what, even if they run away from me. Like, I'm their grandma. That's my right. And that's a little bit cringe.
I think your point wasn't that. I mean, the way I read it was your point wasn't that we had to ask them every minute of every day, of every hour that we wanted to touch them or snuggle with them. I think your point was, if they say no,
yeah,
or if you say, oh, come and give me a hug, and they say no, that we're not supposed to go and hug them.
Yeah.
And I kind of understand that part of it, because
yeah,
I don't think I would, you know, I don't want to force myself on my grandkids, but we haven't had that experience where they flat out say no, that
right,
they don't want to snuggle. Or I guess we have. I guess there have been times when I really stop and think about it where I'll say, come and snuggle. And, you know, one of them will be like, no, I want to stay here.
Well,
but we never force it.
To me,
right,
to me, what was constructive about it, what was good, was that teaching the personal boundary
That's
thing
right,
at a very young age. And like,
yeah,
so I don't have to wait till my kid is 16 before she gets some like super uncomfortable situation with someone from the opposite sex or gets abused by somebody because they didn't know how to establish the personal boundaries.
Right.
So the part
right,
that I loved about it, I mean, I didn't really like the whole thing of like, I have to ask permission. That didn't resonate with me. I didn't agree with that part.
Because you don't want to have to ask.
But the other part of it, which the other part, which is teaching the kid to establish the boundary at 2, 3, whatever, so that they have that through their life and they don't get into those situations with people that could be doing abusive things to them, was great.
Yeah. And it's not even just about the future and when they're 16. It's about right now. Like most kids that are abused in childhood
right,
are abused by a family member, someone that they know.
Agreed.
So
right,
it's not about the grandparents and hurting their feelings. It's about, we need to do this to make sure that our kids know that they can always say no and that that will be respected. And if it's not, then yeah, that's a warning sign to them.
Right.
I agree. And I think that the majority of people out there that are grandparents are like us, where
yeah, they
they're
understand,
thrilled to see their grandkids. The caring kids are thrilled to see them. It doesn't have to be a situation where every time I move, I have to ask to touch them or
right,
or whatever, because
right,
you know, there's no risk here. However, I understood what you meant by it. And I thought that, it, you know, I thought that in the bigger scheme of what you were saying the right thing.
Thanks.
I think it just hit the parent. I think it hit the grandparents that are like us.
Well, and a lot of people,
all good
yeah, intentions. A lot of people said, like, we feel like we have to walk on eggshells. We can't say anything to you guys anymore. And I can understand that point of view for sure. I think,
yeah,
I think what we are trying to say, and I'll just speak for millennial parents, is that we already get so much, like we're inundated with information and opinions about how to raise kids, and it's very overwhelming. And so really, I think what we want from parents and from in-laws is just support and not constantly
yes,
questioning, oh, you're still breastfeeding. Oh, they're still not potty trained. Oh, you're not going to do this way. Oh, you're not going to do this the way I did it when you were little. I think it's just those comments
yeah,
that make people feel really like defensive and judged instead of just supported. And sleep and feeding, as I've learned, are two yeah, very sensitive subjects that people feel really like can feel a lot of shame around. And I think they just don't want to be questioned about it.
Is it the questioning or is it that we shouldn't ask at all? Like,
well, I think it depends. I think it depends on your relationship, honestly. Like if you asked me about when I'm going to stop breastfeeding Lenny, I wouldn't take that as like a personal offense. I would take that as like you just wondering. And the same thing
right,
with my mother-in-law,
exactly,
because I have good relationships
right,
with you and with my mother-in-law. So I think, yeah, I think it really just depends on the person and the dynamic. But all right, next question. Someone wanted to know if I was the easiest baby. So I'm one of three girls. I'm the oldest. And was I the easiest baby? I'm going to guess that was not.
You were three out of three, but that's not bad.
No, your sister Natalie was the easy, Natalie was the easiest baby. My last one, and it could be because by then I knew what I was doing and was way more confident in what I was doing. And I didn't do any of the cry it out with her. You know, so I think that by the time Lauren had it harder because I was still, you know, figuring it out. But by your third one, you're so much more relaxed in your parenting.
I say that all the time. Like, so we say that Lenny is our easiest baby, and we don't really know if that's actually true or if we just are like better parents now and just more like confident. Get it now more. Okay. Someone is asking a question about how to approach their mother-in-law. She says, this is from Haley. She says, how can I kindly ask my mother-in-law to calm down? She thinks everything is a hazard.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting perspective of it not being the parent who thinks everything's a hazard.
I think it gets back to the same thing you were talking about before. Like, you guys have more access to more information about, for example, how to make a house baby-proof or whatever, I mean, than we ever did. You know, the access to the information is there. I'm sure that this woman is doing everything she can to make sure their baby or kids are safe.
Well, so
and then it's just goes back to what the TikTok. You have to establish yourself and say, like, I'm going to say this now, and the role's reversed. I'm going to tell you, the parent, that you can't tell me this stuff, or I've got it covered, or I've access to the information, and I looked at it, and I know what's up. That's all.
Yeah.
I also think that there's a way to talk to your mother-in-law or a parent in a way where they don't feel like they're being excluded. I think the problem is that when someone comes to you and feels like they're trying to give you the knowledge that they knew from years ago, and it's not received as an open conversation, then they get their back up because they feel like they're being excluded out of their grandchild's life in all aspects. So I also think that if there's a way that she could say something that would be like, oh, I understand what you're saying, and I'll think about that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always have to be a yes or a no. It will pacify maybe the mother-in-law to feel like she's taking in the information. It doesn't mean she has to do whatever the mother-in-law is doing. But just to make the mother-in-law feel like she's at least listening to her and not just cutting her off might go a long way.
Yeah.
I don't really agree. I think the mother-in-law needs a harder push.
Being the female, that's what I think. I think that being a mother-in-law is a very difficult position to be in, especially if it's, you know, it's not your daughter, it's your son's baby, and they're not looked at quite the same way, which is already hard for them. You have to be a little sensitive to the mother-in-law, too. That's all.
Okay. Diane's sticking up for all those mother-in-laws. Okay. Somebody else asked a similar question, but I think you kind of touched on it, just how to approach grandparents when we want things done a certain way. And I think to just like summarize what you both say, it's like, it's okay to be direct and to say, this is what I've decided. Like, thanks so much. I'll look into what you said. Or I always tell parents too, like, if it's your in-laws you're dealing with, like, make your partner be the one to say
true.
It. Like,
I agree.
That's a good point.
If Marley ever had a problem with the way you guys were interacting with our kids, he would talk to me about it and I would come to you, or vice versa. So I think it's not fair for, you know, daughter-in-law and mother-in-law to constantly be pitted against each other. That's the partner should be stepping in at a certain point too. What have you learned from my content that you wish you had done when we were little?
Everything.
I can tell you right now, the main thing for me is, and I always want to talk to you about this, so this is a good point to bring it up, but is to have had a more substantial way of listening to you kids versus being the parent and the kid.
Mm.
And feeling like everything had to be a lesson.
Yeah.
And just letting you have more of a voice. And, you know, the whole time out and go to your room and, you know, don't come out until whenever. If I could do one thing different, it would be that. I would never have sent you to your room. I would never have put you in time out. I would have sat down like you do with the kids and I would have said, talk to me.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest regret.
Oh.
Yeah, because we see you guys doing that. We see you and Marley doing that. And at first it was kind of like, what the heck are they doing? Like, you're the authoritarian you're the parent, you're the authority. Put down the law, tell that kid what to do and make them do it, you know? And then we learned after just watching, like, okay, this looks a little weird. But then after that, we're like, you know, that's not so weird anymore. Now they're giving the kid the opportunity to state their position or give their opinion or say how they feel. When we were raising kids, it was like, that's not what you were doing. You just didn't. It was do this, do that. It was, you know, behavior where we're trying to direct and guide behavior. We didn't ask you how you felt about it.
Yeah.
We didn't say, like, you've been in your room for 2 weeks. Now, how do you feel about it? Yeah. You know what I mean? We just put you in there and that was it.
Yeah. Well, you obviously took him out.
Well, after a couple of days, we usually gave you, you know, let you off the hook. But
Yeah, I used to get
grounded. Original stated grounding was like a week or 2 weeks, but after a couple of days, we usually let you come out because we felt sorry for you. But I mean, we didn't think about what you thought or how you felt.
Yeah,
and it also goes back to what you said about fear. You know, there was a sense of fear for you, in the sense of, oh, I'm going to be really punished, or I'm going to, and not to say that children shouldn't have a sense of trepidation when things they're going to do or then they know that are wrong. There should be some sense of, oh, there's going to be a consequence. I still believe consequences are vital in raising children. But I think just letting the kids know that they can come to you with anything and that you're willing to talk to them is huge. To me, that's the biggest thing in your content that I take away.
We're going to take a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Hello, you sentient ball of stardust. My name is Casey Davis. I'm a therapist, and I'm an author of the book, How to Keep House While Drowning, where I talk about ways to make it a little bit easier to take care of yourself when you're overwhelmed, stressed, have mental health issues, physical health issues, or maybe you're just in a hard season of life. Maybe you're looking for a place that you can come and listen to some practical advice. This is a podcast for all of the self-help rejects. We're going to talk about skills for survival and self-kindness. And I'm going to leave the pop psychology at the door. I promise not to tell you to meditate or to journal. We're just going to give you some really insightful conversations with hopefully some practical advice. So I don't believe you need to pick yourself up by the bootstraps. I don't want you to just try harder, and I don't believe that laziness exists. So join me over on Struggle Care, where we can find compassionate solutions that help us function a little bit better.
So yeah, before the break, you were talking about consequences and I think a lot of times right now with parenting, there's like this gentle parenting movement. And I think a lot of times, like what you were saying, people get too permissive, and that's not good either, because kids do, of course, need boundaries. But then when you guys were raising kids, it was more like the authoritarian, like, I'm the parent, you're the kid, you're going to do what I say. I don't really care what you have to say or what you feel about it. This is just the way it is. And really, gentle parenting is supposed to be kind of in the middle. It's not authoritarian, it's authoritative. So it's clear, strong boundaries, but delivered That's in true. A kind way. And so we definitely have consequences for our kids, but we always try to make them logical. So like, instead of, let's say Otto like smashes his Legos on the floor or something like that, in like a tantrum, or he's throwing them at someone or something like that, then instead of, okay, go to your room and don't come out until you're calm, it's, okay, we're going to take these Legos away. These are not a choice anymore. You have to find something right. else to do. So it's more of like a direct logical consequence. Like, you mess up with this thing, you don't get to have this thing right now. But I do think that when you guys were raising us, that was just kind of the norm, is like, you know, you take privileges away, you take friends away. It was more punishment based.
Yeah, which, you think, sure. And I think it makes you kids up to some degree, because I mean, it is one of the things that you bring up to us as, you know, a negative in your childhood. And it, you know, we can't go back and change it, but
no, of course.
We can only hope that in your line of work, especially, that you understand where that was coming from and don't.
Yeah.
You
I
know,
mean, I really think that most parents are like just doing their best. I know that you guys like loved yeah. us, obviously, and that you were doing your absolute best and you always were doing what you thought was right. And like, luckily, we all turned out well and
Pretty
like
good.
We're well adjusted.
In spite of it.
In spite of it all.
In spite of all.
No, but like we're all like in like healthy relationships and like have good jobs and like we're all good. Not to say that we don't all have issues and like, you know, different things that we could work on or different things that stem out of our childhoods. But I think to a certain extent, everybody does. And like my kids someday will say that I messed them up in a different way. It's just, we're all just doing our best.
I hope I'm here to see them.
Well,
I know you
all
do.
All of your peers were raised by our peers. So all of your contemporaries are messed up in just
the exact
much,
same way.
And in the same way.
Yeah.
So we're on a level playing field.
Exactly. That's true. Okay, before we wrap up, one thing that I try to ask everybody that comes on the podcast is, what was one thing that you wish that someone had told you before you had kids? What was something that no one told you to just like prepare for, or something that really caught you off guard once you first became parents?
Oh, I know what it is.
Go ahead. You go first. No, go first.
I think for me, aside from the sheer exhaustion of it, how it was going to affect our relationship and how we didn't really talk about how we were going to parent before we had the baby.
Yeah.
So I think for us, we didn't have a lot. We had grandpa at the house. So if we wanted to go out, I mean, we could leave you with grandpa, but after he had a stroke, we didn't have anybody. Yeah. And I think, you know, people have to realize it changes your relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it there's no way around it. You're exhausted. It changes your attention toward each other. It changes your snippiness toward each other because you're tired. And you say it all the time that it's just for a season. But when Dad and I were going through it, we had never heard that phrase. And I think that phrase allows you to think of your relationship as just, we're just in this moment. This will get better.
Mm-hmm.
It can change. We'll come back toward each other. But back in our day, it was like, no one said that. So it was just like, it was just always a struggle to connect. And you think it's going to be like that forever. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Dad?
To me, I think it's the thing that you spend so much time being anxious and worried about it before you have kids. But then as soon as you have them, like a day after you have the kid or 2 days after you have your first kid, it feels like that's your life all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And there's almost no, then suddenly it's there, you've got the kid and you figure it out. And I think it just gets back to what we said at the beginning and what you said to people, which is like, don't get all anxious about it, because this phenomenal thing is always going to happen, and it happens to everybody, which is, as soon as you have the kid, you bring the kid home, you don't know what you're doing, but you figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And that's just some human phenomenon that happens to people where they don't know anything, they've got no experience with this, but somehow they figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everything is just a phase. So even if you're in like a super hard phase, either in your relationship or in your parenting, like it really is, everything is short-lived. Everything's a season. Everything's a phase.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's critical to remember, because it does get stressful. It does, you know, you do have your moments where you think, I can't do this. How am I going to do this? How are we going to do this? And then, you know, you go to bed, you wake up, it's a new day, and all of a sudden you have a new perspective.
Yeah.
And you do it all again, but somehow maybe that day will be a better day. And you hope for the better days, and you take what you get when you have the bad days. And you just remember, like you've said 1,000 times, it's just a season.
Last question. Is it true what they say about how it goes by so fast? Because my kids are still so tiny. And your youngest is about to be 30. So is it true that it went by fast?
Totally true.
You know, there's that song by Kenny Chesney, something about blinking, you know?
Yeah, don't blink.
Don't blink. That song hits it right on the head. When I look back, I think, because in our minds, we are still 25, even though we're not, we still feel like we're young kids. And then we think, oh my God, our youngest daughter is going to get married and be 30. And I've got 3 grandkids. Like, where? It's just so fast. And you know, the thing is too, is that even though you want to appreciate it and you want to not take it for granted, it's just the way life is. Mm-hmm. You know, you do. And before you know it, you're going to turn around too and be like, oh my God, I can't believe Otto is 18 and, you know, in college or whatever. I mean, it does go by fast. It's just the way life is.
And I think it's such a mistake to like wish the time away. You know, you're like, if you're a goal-oriented person, you're like, well, when my kid gets out of high school, then I can prepare to pay for college. Or, you know, you're always like looking ahead and like almost like wanting to burn off the time so you can get to the next step. And, you know, if you're paying for stuff, if you're a parent and you're paying for stuff, you're looking at it from that point of view, like how much time do I have to save for this? And you're just, you end up almost like wishing the time away.
That's true.
Which I think is a huge, you know, problem and mistake. And I think it's just a, you know, a modern society problem, which is that people can't live in the moment, that things are going by so fast and there's so much information hitting them. And they're always like thinking ahead, what's the next thing I want to buy or what's the next thing I want to do or next job or whatever. And living in the moment is so, so important. And I think it's harder to do when you're younger than it is when you're older too. So people that are younger probably have a hard time doing that. I'm not sure if that's right, but I think
when you're parenting young kids and it seems so intense and like everybody needs you so much and you don't ever get a moment to yourself, like I think it is easy to fall into that, like, oh my God, I can't wait till they're older. But then when they're older, you miss it. So it's hard. But that's good advice, to just try as much as you can to stay present and to enjoy the moments that you can enjoy, and the ones that suck, just let them go. And remember that it's a season. Mom and Dad, I'll let you guys go because you're at Natalie's house right now, ready to help her with something. But thank you so much for joining. I think everybody's going to really love to hear this episode.
Thank you.
We love seeing you.
Love you.
Love you too. You.
Hello, you sentient ball of stardust. My name is Casey Davis. I'm a therapist and I'm an author of the book, How to Keep House While Drowning, where I talk about ways to make it a little bit easier to take care of yourself when you're overwhelmed, stressed, have mental health issues, physical health issues, or maybe you're just in a hard season of life. Maybe you're looking for a place that you can come and listen to some practical advice. This is a podcast for all of the self-help rejects. We're going to talk about skills for survival and self-kindness. And I'm going to leave the pop psychology at the door. I promise not to tell you to meditate or to journal. We're just going to give you some really insightful conversations with hopefully some practical advice. So I don't believe you need to pick yourself up by the bootstraps. I don't want you to just try harder. And I don't believe that laziness exists. So join me over on Struggle Care, where we can find compassionate solutions that help us function a little bit better.